This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. In the aftermath of the assault on the Capitol on January 6th, a number of leading Democrats have called for expansion of domestic surveillance and anti-terrorism laws in response to threats from the far right. Last week, 9 progressive Congress members submitted a formal letter of opposition to those lawmakers who are calling for more restrictive laws. In their Left in the Law segment, Jan Hawken and Mike Snedeker talk about why it's important to join this opposition to the expansion of federal laws in response to white supremacists and other right-wing groups. Jan and Mike also discuss the charges brought so far against those participating in the January 6th siege of the Capitol and difficulties in how we even characterize these actions.
In the aftermath of the assault on the Capitol on January 6, a number of leading Democrats have called for expansion of domestic surveillance and anti-terrorism laws. Mike, let's start today with the charges so far against those participating in the riot, and then to the larger questions around these calls among Democrats for more restrictive federal laws in response to the threats by the far right. To start with, does it matter what we call the rioters? There's been a debate in the left as well about how to characterize this siege on the Capitol.
Well, it's tricky because, as usual, when there's a large number of people acting, the range of motives was vast. I mean, there are people there who were scheming and had been for weeks and wanted to make a serious move and occupy the Capitol if Trump was not given the presidency they believed was rightfully his. And there are other people who sort of vaguely thought that, who wanted to be in the mix. You know, so it's impossible to sort out with any real accuracy everyone's motives.
Well, what have been the charges so far and the complaint that the FBI has held back and there have been some constraints on charges, too few charges in many cases?
Well, as of a couple of days ago, as of January 26th, there was 147 people charged. And the charges were a mix of disorderly conduct, of knowingly entering, remaining in a restricted building. And some people were charged with knowingly engaging in disorderly or disruptive conduct with a dangerous weapon, with injuring property, injuring architectural features, with violent entry, disorderly conduct, all that mix of charges, which is pretty accurate.
That have various criminal penalties,
yes,
attached to them that would be under federal law?
Yeah, D.C. is not under state law. It's under basically the jurisdiction of the U.S. government.
Would federal penalties for those kinds of criminal charges be much different from state penalty?
Not much different, no. And they are investigating, and we don't know yet what will come of the charges against people who we know were involved with hurling fire extinguishers, and there could even be murder charges brought. There could certainly be manslaughter charges brought. They're now still sifting through the identification of who was what, because it was a very well-recorded event. I'm sure there'll be more charges later.
Well, I think the area of concern and controversy center at the level of charges and prosecution of cases involves these more political charges of sedition, insurrection, conspiracy charges against organizations like Proud Boys and Three Percenters. What about those charges? Can you speak to those categories? Some of them are kind of rhetorical invectives, but others have real legal meaning.
Yeah, those charges that deal with one's intent, with one's political views, are always bad. They were first done, as far as I know, in 1917 and 1918, when opposition to World War I was criminalized. And any action, any disparagement of the government for entering the war or any effort to slow down any of the economic activity underlying the war was criminalized. And of course, all kinds of people who were opposed
under sedition charges.
Yeah, there was an Espionage Act and sedition laws passed that were the subject of intense litigation hundreds of people that were actually rounded up, prosecuted, and either deported or sent to prison for opposing the war or supporting those who did oppose the war. Eugene Debs went to prison because of opposition to the war and these espionage and sedition acts, and they gave birth to some of the most articulate First Amendment defenses, always done by dissenters, not by the majority, of appeals from convictions for sedition or espionage under these new laws.
So since 9/11 and the Patriot Act, much of the discourse and the federal responses to political violence have been directed toward foreign groups identified as terrorists. And could you give your take on this shift from focusing on foreign terrorists to now this call for identifying the far right as domestic terrorists, and Nancy Pelosi even asking for something like a post 9/11 commission to take up these questions?
Well, a commission to examine exactly what happened would be a great thing, but
in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that progressive Democrats have called for as well. A transparent and clear investigation.
Yeah, because we want to know what happened. Everyone does want to know what really happened. And a good investigation with subpoena powers would be a wonderful thing. I do hope that happens. What we can count on, though, is that any laws passed as a result of this, any expansion of the Patriot Act to go from allowing wiretapping and getting rid of all sorts of due process protections because of foreign threats, any efforts to allow that to also happen to people who are supposedly domestic threats would be a terrible mistake. I mean, it's not hard to imagine, for example, 2 years from now, when Joe Biden, who's off to a great start now, gets embroiled in a war on Iran. He's got very aggressive people appointed now to the Department of State, like Victoria Nuland. It's not at all out of the question that there will be some sort of war activity. And there will be, of course, a violent response to that, any such war activity, because it would be so disastrous, so fundamentally stupid and wrong. And people would say that, and they would attack the policies and the rationales. And I can promise you that if we pass extended laws now allowing for domestic terrorism, there will be efforts, of course, to extend the Patriot Act to say that anybody who opposes our foreign policy is covered. But the efforts to extend have not yet worked out. And if there's domestic terrorism, or it's straight up make it impossible for people to complain about domestic policy without coming under the eye of the FBI potentially, that would be really bad. And I can promise you that although the far right is in the targets right now, the targeteurs, the FBI, various law enforcement agents, won't keep their telescope there very long, that they're going to extend it to people who may be pursuing laws, in fact, that would attack police efforts to extend their powers, or people who might support efforts to limit police powers, to limit their ability to hide, for example, their past conduct. All sorts of domestic issues arise that people speak really vehemently about. And I can promise you that that sort of activity will be investigated as crimes far sooner and for a more extended period than any effort to right now deal with the far right and Proud Boys and these sputtering groups who have always been with us. You know, what Trump did was enable them to come out from under rocks. But in the 1930s, Father Coughlin had racist, anti-Semitic and broadcasts going on that was enormously popular all over the country. Going back to the Civil War, and certainly since then, there's been a strong element of people who feel exactly as do most of the white supremacists who were at the Capitol. To think that we need more laws to control them would be, I think, a really grievous mistake.
Well, then what about existing laws? Because these progressive Congress members made the point in their letter to the House leadership that it's important to recognize white nationalists and QAnon groups as the national security threat that they are and take action to combat them through existing laws, powers, and regulations, which are more than efficient to meet this threat. And it sounds like you would agree with that.
There's plenty of power now to investigate them. That's not the problem. We need no new litigation. I mean, murder is wrong. Conspiracy to overthrow the government is wrong. Conspiracy to break and enter, actually breaking and entering, hitting people, breaking up property. These are all crimes.
But what about, just staying with that point a bit, about what is a crime and what isn't, and aren't there arguments to be made, too, that our existing laws, in fact, that's a big part of the Black Lives Matter movement, are oppressive in many ways, including around surveillance. So is there a false comfort in this distinction between our existing laws and this worrisome or horrifying proposed expansion of surveillance by some of the House leadership?
Well, of course there is. There are extensive laws now. Laws are always being passed to control people who would, quote, overthrow the government. That was the substance of the Smith Act and laws designed to limit the spread of communism. And they all had to do with one's subjective intentions. I mean, to overthrow the government, what does that really mean? I mean, if you're voting for the Green Party, you're trying to replace the government that exists with a different government. It always has to judge criminal law on the basis of subjectivity and intentions is always something that powers that be want, but they should never have. They should confine themselves to actions. Now, if you are planning to blow up a train station for whatever reason, it doesn't matter whether it's a right-wing reason or a left-wing reason, that's against the law. Law that bases itself in part on the subjective intent of someone is a bad law. There are laws like that around still. In some ways, intent is always a part of criminal law. I mean, did you do so willfully and wantonly? Did you do so with the intent to permanently deprive? Intent is always at issue. You know, did you mean to kill that person? Was it an accident? Or did you plan it for a week?
Does that also enter into the prosecution of cases where some of the right-wing activists claim to have been kind of swept up or responding to the call of Trump and kind of in the surge of the urgency of the moment versus something planned in advance?
Sure. I mean, if you conspired to break down doors and enter the Capitol and kidnap Nancy Pelosi, that's one thing. If you felt like you were serving the wide and broad interests of the millions of people who voted for Donald Trump and have no more general intent than that and want to be part of some sweeping historical moment, that's another thing. So there are issues of intent, but they should be really kept close to the bone. That is, not just broad senses of thinking that if you can prove that somebody wants to overthrow the government, well, you've provided enough intent for some criminal penalty.
What about the rhetorical side of this and how these groups are described? And I think there's been a lot of, I struggle with what to call them. You know, we don't call uprisings in the left and the history of the Black Power movement there. We don't call them riots, so sometimes I think that term can be used probably fairly, but call them uprisings. So your political sympathies do shape how you frame these events. What language would you use? And does it matter whether we, aside from the legal aspects of this, what we call them?
Well, of course it matters. It's entirely political, how you call them. And that's all part of persuasion, of expanding your support. That's an entirely different question than the criminal law.
Right. But I think in that other question, or you can pass on it, whether in the left discussion of the siege on the Capitol, I mean, I've kind of settled on the term rioters, but that also implies a passion of the moment, does it not? And moves you away from the idea of something more coordinated on the part of the far right. So maybe that term also is problematic.
It is, you know, and I have cast about for the right way to call it, but it's like an event.
Capital E, the event at the Capitol, the January 6th event.
J6, you know, J6 is coming to be, you know, more and more widely used, and because it does evade any category. Like, riot implies something that happens when everybody is totally out of control. And it wasn't like that. It was planned ahead. There were exhortations from a wide variety of politicians urging people to show up. And show up, what does show up mean? And there are other people who said, this is ours. We've got to take the Capitol. It's ours. We want it. And but there's a wide swath of these kinds of attitudes that people had. And it lasted for a few hours. In some ways, it was a farce. I mean, it was pretty easily disbanded once the police got their stuff together.
Right. And then it seemed that the level of planning and the more formal organized part, participation of far right groups kind of emerged later. And I think it's still not entirely clear on that front. But, well, let's continue to follow the event of January 6th as things unfold and continue to talk about how much of a threat the organized far right is, as well as what to be cautious about what we call for, because it can visit upon us as well, come down on our heads as well.
It was a great event in many ways for the Democrats and for the left, because it was a bad intent and poorly executed. But we should not allow this to expand into changing and increasing criminal sanctions for anyone.
Okay, so this is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talking today about calls in Congress for expansion of domestic surveillance and anti-terrorism laws after January 6th and why we need to resist those calls. So we'll keep following this.